Dawn Barnes, welcome to the Sounds of Success.
Why, thank you, Rob. Happy to be here.
And we're very pleased to have you. How many schools do you have, Dawn?
We have 4, and we're currently negotiating for school number 5.
Oh, fantastic. And where will that school be located?
Well, we have 4 schools right now around L.A., and then the 5th school is within the vicinity near the coast of Manhattan Beach.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us a little bit about your different programs. What do you offer? What's the tuition structure?
Tuition. Well, we do auto debit. We have basically 3 programs that are age-specific. So I have the Tiger Tots, which are the preschoolers, 3.5 and 4-year-olds. Then I have the Lions program, which are 5 and 6-year-olds. So that goes kindergarten, first grade. And then first grade tends to be the borderline into the Dragons program, which is our junior black belt program. So the preschool program, we have the kids come once a week. Currently, we charge $115 for that. And then the classes are 50 minutes long. The Lions program, which are the 5 to 6-year-olds, and they come twice a week. There we charge $160. And the Dragons come, they're the 7 to 14-year-olds, and they attend twice a week, and that tuition is $175. Hmm. Now, once they're about halfway to black belt, we invite them into the black belt club, and that is tuition is $225.
Hmm, interesting. Now, you said the Tiger Tots are at $115, but the Dragons are at $175. Why the $60 a month price increase?
The difference of once and twice a week.
Okay. So the Tiger Tots are coming once, the Dragons are attending twice.
Right.
I understand. Now, just out of curiosity, when you first got into the business, I'm sure your prices weren't what they are today.
No. When I first opened, my first school was 11 years ago, and I was charging $80 a month.
Mm-hmm.
The people would pay me by the month, of course, so I was always being a bill collector, and on top of it, they would strategically plan it, so they would say, oh, we're off for the month of December for the holidays, and oh, we're gone for the summer to our summer home in the Hamptons, and so, of course, I was always struggling to pay my rent during those months, and after the first year, I said, you know, I don't really like this, so I went on to sessions where they paid me 3 months in advance, which was nice. I had to monitor the cash flow. But I was still left with the same situation of not having funds over the summer because summer is notorious for half the kids leaving into summer camps or vacations or whatnot, especially in our demographics. I mean, we open up in higher demographic areas, so these kids are world travelers.
Mm-hmm. So if I understand you correctly, you're having the kids pay for summer in advance.
Yeah, well, now we're on annual agreements, and through our billing company, Member Solution, who I love, they're great,
mm-hmm.
and they basically are collecting the tuition. I don't have to worry about it, and we have an open makeup policy. So we're collecting tuition all year round, and even if they're gone for a month or two in the summer, we say, well, do your makeups before or after. It's an open makeup policy as long as you're enrolled in the school.
And what do you mean by an open makeup policy?
Meaning if they're going to be gone for a month, and that's, say, 8 classes that they'd be missing, we just say come to extra classes before and after your vacation time.
Okay, so it's not a situation where they're missing some classes, so they're not paying for them. They're just paying for them and making them up later.
Exactly.
Of course, and that's certainly the wisest approach. And Dawn, approximately, what is your total student count?
We are around 1,400 students now between the 4 schools.
Wow. That's a lot. Fantastic.
A lot of families, a lot of parents.
I'm sure. Boy, in this group of 1,400 students, which of the 3 age groups comprises the largest group?
You know, it seems to be a pretty even, about a third for each group. We have about a third Tiger Tots, a third Lions, and a third Dragons. But if you analyze that out, I mean, basically, that means two-thirds of my school, the children are between ages 4 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
So we really do have a big market on the kids that are younger.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have, again, 30% of my students are Dragons. I mean, that's still, what, 450
mm-hmm.
students
mm-hmm.
are in the junior black belt program, and at least half of those are in the black belt club. So we have a strong program for all ages.
Mm-hmm. And what's the youngest you've ever accepted a student?
It was always 4. We just started to open it up to 3.5 It depends, you know, some of them are ready. They've already been taking preschool and they're able to focus on the program, but it's tricky. I find that the 3.5-year-olds are tricky. They have to be ready. They're not always ready, but usually by 4 they're more ready to listen to reasoning.
Sure. So if a mom brings in a 3.5-year-old child, I'm assuming they go through some kind of an evaluation, then you determine if they can get into that Tiger Tots program.
Right. We offer the first class free, so that's their evaluation time.
I understand. Now, if it's not too private, what's your approximate annual gross from the 4 schools combined?
Well, we are at a current run rate of about $2.5 million a year and growing pretty quickly.
Wow, $2.5 million a year. Wow. Okay, not a bad start. You can live off that.
Yeah.
Your husband, Ben, mentioned to me that your big school in Santa Monica recently generated your highest grossing month ever. What was that gross, and do you see that number increasing from here?
Yeah, absolutely. We basically, that school has around 550 students, and we've been consistently grossing the last 4 months over $100,000 a month.
Over 100. So Member Solutions must like that.
They love it.
I'm sure that they do.
They handle 1,500 schools, and we are, if not the top, we are one of the top 2 grossing schools that they have.
And in that Santa Monica school, you're saying that the numbers are pretty big there. How long has that school been open?
That school, that was my original school was in Santa Monica. So I opened up a small one-room school 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then I expanded it to 2 rooms about 3 years ago. And then we recently, a year ago, moved to a larger space where we have 3 dojos.
Wow.
Going. And often in the afternoons, we've got 3 rooms going at once.
Interesting. So, okay, $2.5 million a year. That's a pretty huge number. You know, I was chatting with a California...
That's enough, Rob. I have very big goals.
I know you do. You have the loftiest goals of anybody I've met in the martial arts, and I'm proud of you for that. But you're doing 2.5, but I'm wondering how much of that is profit. You know, I was chatting with a California-based school owner just recently, and he told me he had a $26,300 per month rent. Now, that can really eat into the profits. Would you say that your schools are pretty profitable?
Very. Well, you know, when you first open, obviously the percentage of rate to gross is relatively high, and around... I would say it's usually around 20% for that first year, which is really high. We try to bring it down to around 14-15%,
mm-hmm.
so that we, you know, and then as more students enroll, it drops from there. So it, after a certain base number of students covering your overhead, it's all gravy, so to speak.
Okay, so I guess you have found a way to really make these schools profitable, which is certainly key in business.
Yeah.
One of the things that's very unique about your operation is that you only teach kids.
Right.
Why is that?
Commitment. The parents will have a long day at work, or adults, I should say, might have a long day at work, or they're just busy with their family, they're tired, and they just basically will not necessarily commit. They'll say, you know, I'm going home. I'm going to be with my family for dinner, or I'm taking a hot bath, whatever it is. Whereas if a child says, Mom, you know, I'm a little tired. I want to go to karate. The parent says, you're going because I paid.
Mm-hmm.
So I have found that I have over the years tried to create some adult classes for the parents who have asked. And again, they'll commit for the short term, but definitely not for the long term. And I just realized that it was much better to specialize and focus in, and because I have done that, it has really paid off. People know what they're getting when they come to quote karate kids.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they're getting as soon as they see the sign, and they appreciate that we specialize, and that's our focus.
Well, of course, if you have adults and kids in the school, it changes the whole dynamic.
Yes, it does, and often we have a situation in schools where children are clumped together in extreme age variations, and often children are in class with adults.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And really, they just need to be taught differently depending on where they are in their development.
Mm-hmm. I'm also going to make the assumption that it's easier to staff a martial arts school that only teaches kids or only teaches adults rather than both. Would you agree?
Well, not necessarily. I think teaching children is much more difficult. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to keep them interested, keep them focused, move the energy around, use language that is age-appropriate so that they understand what you're explaining to them. Keep them excited. They need a lot of reward system. Whereas when you're teaching an adult, you can give a simple explanation. The adult is there because they're interested. Mm-hmm. You can give them an explanation on a technique and give them a couple, yeah, that's it, or that's good, and you're done. The energy is so much less as far as what you have to give out when you teach adults. That's what I found anyway.
Yeah, and no, I agree with you. I think we were thinking about that question from two totally different perspectives. I know that a lot of adults come into the school, they want to learn how to fight. They want to learn self-defense. Yeah. They want to learn survival skills. They want to slam with the instructor oftentimes. Right. And I don't think you get that with the kids.
Right, no. I mean, some of the teens, you know, they come in with those attitudes, and then I just got to throw them down a little bit, and attitude adjustment, and I make it playful, but I let them know who the big dog is, and then they're fine.
Okay.
But yeah, in general, the kids are not looking for that. They're there because they want to be superheroes, and it seems like a fun sport.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. Now, we talked about the different age groups of kids at your school. Let's go over the groupings again, just to kind of give our audience a better perspective. You said you had the Tiger Tots, and that's ages 4 through?
Actually, preschool, 3.5 to 4.
3.5 to 4.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I used to include kindergarten in that group.
Okay.
But developmentally, I found that the difference between a preschooler and a child in kindergarten was actually pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
When they're in kindergarten, all of a sudden they have a much more structured environment in their academic mm-hmm. situation, and they're mentally just more aware. They're asking more questions. They're understanding more. And a 3.5 and 4-year-olds in preschool are just not quite as focused yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to create that interim program actually not long ago called the Lions, which again are the kindergartners and first graders, and that has been a huge success. And by creating that interim program, I increased my income almost overnight by nearly 30%.
Whoa.
So it was a nice creation for the book.
And what's the age group on the Lions again?
They're 5 and 6.
5 and 6. So help me understand something. You had 5 and 6-year-olds in the school before. How'd you increase your income by 30%?
Because they were coming once a week at $115.
And you bumped into 160.
Right.
Oh,
plus formal belt testing, which is $55. Before, they weren't paying for formal belt testing. Now there's workshops they can attend, tournaments. There's just extra activities that they can attend because of their age that we're now getting extra income for.
I understand.
So I took 30% of our students and bumped them up about almost 50%.
Did you meet any resistance from the parents when the price increased?
No, because they were, you know, one thing I found about with parents, initially they don't like change, but when they see that it's good for their child, they jump on the bandwagon, and parents tend to be very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, when their child was getting invited into the Lions, or they saw the neighbor's child getting invited into the Lions program because their child had more focus, and then they were saying, well, I want to get into the Lions too.
Mm. I see.
They always want their kids to get into the next group up, even if they're not ready. And I knew that I could use that psychology to work for me.
Uh-huh. Now, you said something that was of interest. You said you charge for formal belt testing. You do not integrate the belt testing fees into the tuition. Is that correct?
Right. Right now, they test around every 3 months, and it's a separate fee, and they come to about a 45-minute formal test with the parents and go through the little demonstration and ceremony, and
sure.
it's really positive. It gets the parents, and especially parents that may be working and don't get to always watch classes, it gives them a chance to see their child in action. So it's actually very positive. I I am toying right now with the idea of creating an all-inclusive fee, but we're just trying to figure out what that happy mean number would be. But for now, we have it separate.
Why would you include it?
Well, I think that it's nice not to have to ask parents for money.
Yeah, yeah.
And we also have a pretty active retail store, so they're usually spending things on their kids almost always when they come in, and then all of a sudden we're asking for test fees and we're asking for a workshop fee, and I think it might be nice just to say one price includes everything, and look at how great this is.
Yeah, something to experiment with anyway. Right. Dawn, how long are your classes?
They're 50 minutes.
Okay, is that for all the age groups?
Yes.
Okay. Now, some instructors would argue that your success is in large part due to your location. You're in Los Angeles, California. Is your success due to geography, or do you think you could duplicate your results pretty much anywhere?
Well, as John Corcoran told me, who's, you know, the editor of the MA Pro and MA Success magazines, he said, your success is really amazing in the fact that you are in Los Angeles, because Los Angeles is for sure one of the most competitive and saturated markets in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that every couple blocks here there seems to be a karate school or a martial arts school. So it is highly competitive. But I don't really consider that I have any competition. Again, our program is so unique, and our teaching method and how we do it, our environment, we specialize in children. People know that. We have a really positive word-of-mouth reputation around town. And so I guess my feeling is if it absolutely could be duplicated, because if I could do it here, we can do it anywhere.
Yeah. You know, I would tend to agree with that after having spent some time in your schools. You're very, very well systematized, and just to put it bluntly, you got your act together, and I think that's just the key, you know.
You saw me on a good day.
I don't know about that.
I am human, too.
Yeah, well, we all are, but no, you really do have your act together, and that was quite obvious to me. You know, when we were in Atlantic City recently, you mentioned to me that your strongest days of the week are Saturday and Sunday. And I found this intriguing, since most schools are shut down on the weekends or they have very limited hours. Talk to us about what happens at your schools over the weekends.
The schools are packed on weekends. It just boggles my mind when I drive by other schools and they're closed on the weekends. Families today, especially two parents working, they often can't come but on the weekends. So you are potentially losing an entire group of children by not being open on weekends, or just being open a short time on weekends. I've seen other schools with their schedules where they only have a belt test on Saturday morning and that's it,
mm-hmm.
and then they're closed. Or
right.
they just have a special kind of a workshop, or what, better yet, I saw someone on a Saturday morning that used that prime time slot, that 10 to noon time slot on a Saturday morning. They were using it for free classes for kids who couldn't afford it, which is a nice thought, but hello, you don't use prime income-making time. We are schools on Saturday mornings, and Sunday mornings are packed. And
why is that? What do you think?
Well, again, working parents, and also, especially on Sundays, it gives the dads, I notice, a lot of dads come
mm-hmm.
on Sundays, it gives them the opportunity to really enjoy their children when they can't often do it during the week.
Very interesting. You speak to many different school owners. What do you feel are some of the biggest mistakes they're making when it comes to business?
I would say aesthetics and a professional business structure.
Okay, that's a lot there, Dawn.
Yes. yeah, aesthetics is, you know, it cracks me up again. I can't tell you how many times I drive by a martial arts school and the first thing I see on the front door is the word no.
No?
No.
No, what
you know
no?
How many schools have the word no on their front door? It is psychologically the worst possible thing you could do. You go up, you're looking for information, and what do you see? A big sign with red letters that says, no food, no drink, no shoes. Do I really want to enter? I mean, I've already felt like someone's reprimanding me. So often people just aren't kind of considering the psychological impact of what a place should feel like, because the feeling, or I should say look like, because the aesthetics will create an emotional response in all of us. If you walk into a room that is completely black, all the walls are black, how you're going to have one feeling as opposed to walking into a room where the walls are bright, sunny yellow.
You'll think you're in the Viper Room at L.A. if all the walls were black. You know, I agree with you completely, and I want to add something to this if I can. A couple weeks ago, I was invited to do a little speech at a grand opening for a local school owner by the name of Rick Martin, and I went into his school for the first time, his new location, and I was pretty blown away. The school was just gorgeous. As soon as you walk in, to the right, there was a big, beautiful koi pond.
Nice.
There was everything was done in rock, and there was a waterfall in there, and real trees growing up, and to get onto the deck, there was like a big red gate that looked like a big Japanese symbol that you had to walk through, and he had imported tile from Okinawa, which he used on the inside of the school to give it the feel like it was the outside of basically a Japanese building.
Nice.
And the whole school is just so beautiful and professional, and I just thought to myself, I said, you know, two things. Number one, this really symbolizes the evolution of the martial arts field, but secondly, I thought, why don't more school owners just take the time to do this as opposed to, you know, slapping down a piece of indoor-outdoor carpet and some mirrors and saying, hey, we've got a karate school. It just doesn't take that much to make it gorgeous. Would you agree?
I agree. It's nice to hear that aesthetics are becoming more of the martial arts world. It's about time, especially when you think of our rich philosophy in the martial arts with Zen and that sense of feng shui and space and movement. Anyway, I think that aesthetics are extremely important in a school. I think people have just taken the standard route because it's easy and cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also, not everyone has taste. I happen to personally love design and interior design. I always have. So
it shows in your schools.
Thank you. It comes natural, but that, you know, and no judgment, it just doesn't necessarily come natural to everybody, in which case, get some help. Hire an interior decorator. The small fee that you may end up paying, whatever it is, a few thousand dollars for an interior decorator, will come back to you many fold.
Mm-hmm, I agree completely. And the second thing you said was that a lot of school owners lack a professional business system. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Definitely. It's very important to be clear on your program, curriculum, on your staff training, on your business management behind the desk, because if you are not clear on that, and if things are subjective and changing, and a lot of handwritten notes are hung, it really will not. You won't present yourself to your customer that you are really a school, and a school should be very organized. It's a place of learning.
Very good, Dawn. Okay, so you have a multi-million-dollar business. You're highly successful. How many hours a week do you spend at your schools on the deck actually teaching the classes?
I have to say that it's, believe it or not, I have more free time now than I ever have before. And it's having a very clean and organized system. It's having a well-trained staff and just following through with the meetings and management and making sure that it's all run the way that it should. So I basically now, I just get to have a lot of fun when it comes to the mat, that's for sure. I teach when I want to. So I'll go to the schools and hop in on the mat for Black Belt Club or sometimes just jump in with the Tiger Toss and play a little game with them, and it really is a lot of fun now.
So I guess the moral of the story is that you've learned to become a master of delegation, and that allows you to be in more of a leadership role. Now,
right.
In my opinion, that's truly one of the keys to growing a business and a real weak spot in the martial arts. How do you recruit, screen, and ultimately select your instructors? Give us a general overview.
Screen the instructors. Most people know that there's a internet job search program called Craigslist, and we have been having great success finding really quality people on that search engine. And I really look for people who have a background in hardstyle karate as well as experience with working with children, mm-hmm. because that to me is almost more important. I get people that come that have national championships and or trophies that they've won from big competitions, and that doesn't really matter to me. I want to see in their eyes that they love working with kids, and I want to see that spark and that connection and that children relate to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually have them, if they pass the first interview and everything looks good, then I have them assist in a class on the mat, and I just watch how they interact with the kids and how the kids respond to them.
And what are you really looking for? Are you looking for guys, girls, young people, old people? Are you looking for people that are animated and teach with like an edutainment style of an approach? What are you looking for in your instructors?
All of it.
Really,
it's just it. We have. I've noticed that most of my instructors tend to be closer to around 30s. I tend to hire people again that have a lot of experience and that also want to have a career with us.
Mm-hmm.
So once they're hired, they go through 40 hours of teacher's training, and they basically learn our teaching method called positive dialogue response and how to really work with the kids psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also get to know our class format for all the different levels, for the three age groups.
I see. And on that note, let's focus for just a bit on how you conduct your staff training. Talk to us about how frequently you train your staff, what your training sessions are like, and certainly the types of topics you cover.
Well, we basically have weekly technique training for the instructors. And we have ongoing role-playing training with the desk staff.
Mm.
So we have also have a manager's meeting. I would say bi-monthly we do a manager's meeting, and then monthly we have an all-staff meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just consistent communication with emails and so forth, just always working to fine-tune the program.
Okay, and you're the one that's actually doing the staff training.
Right.
Okay. So
And or my managers. So, for example, the managers will be sitting there with a desk person and all of a sudden just run through some role-playing, that kind of thing.
Okay, I understand. Do you pay your staff members very well? Do you offer them benefits?
Yes. We most of our part-time instructors, so they might be working 15, 20 hours a week, they're making $30 to $40 an hour. And we have our managers who are making $55,000 to $70,000 a year, and that includes medical and vacation time, paid vacation time.
And based upon their performance, do they have some room in there to grow their income?
They do, absolutely. We have bonus plans. We have an annual review where they can increase their income anywhere from 5 to 10% based on basically a chart that we go through with them and see if they've been following through with all their responsibilities.
I see. Can I make the assumption that your staff retention is pretty high?
It is. You know, the staff that will go in and out within a year or two are really the people that are there. They only wanted something part-time and not for long-term. But I am now really focusing on hiring people that want a long-time career with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and truly one of the incentives of creating those professional business systems and as I said earlier, really getting the act together is that obviously your cash flow is going to increase tremendously, and then you can afford to hire good quality staff members and pay them the money that they deserve so they're not always looking over their shoulders for the next job that comes along.
Exactly. We want people to have a career. I mean, as the company grows, we eventually want to get into the 401k plan as well.
Wow, that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, I've been currently working on the first all-children's license package called Karate Kids World. And you've read my books, or my first book, right?
The Black Belt
Club. The children in the book, the Black Belt Club members in the book, go to the dojo called Karate Kids World. So it's going to be tied into that national publicity and branding, especially when the movie comes out. So we're tying into that, and basically I've been working diligently the last month putting together a dojo in a box. So it's all of the tools and management manuals and so forth that we use in our school to have the success we have, and I'm putting that together in a license package that we're going to present at this year's Super Show.
Oh, fantastic. And that's right around the corner. So
yeah.
Good. Excellent. Now, it's pretty clear to me anyway that one of your strong points is generating PR for yourself and or your schools.
Mm-hmm.
Give us some easy to implement, highly effective ideas that any instructor could do immediately to generate some fast PR for their school. Give us at least one idea.
Okay. I would, most of our students still come from word of mouth, but offhand, one promotion idea I can recommend that I know has been working is a Bring a Friend Month coupon. So every few months we hand out these coupons, and we always get enrollments from them.
Okay, and they can bring in the buddy for one class? Is that what it is?
Right.
Okay, and once the buddy comes in, are they needing to fill out any paperwork so you actually get their contact information?
Right. Well, we make sure that they come in with their parents so uh-huh. that they fill out our information card and, of course, which contains our liability clause, and then they have their class because we want the parent to be – same with trial students. We don't let any students take a trial without their parent there.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to see how great the program is and be there on hand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we do, and we get a lot of kids signing up from that program.
Boy, that's great. And do you do that type of promotion very often?
About every few months.
About every few months. Okay, that's great. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Some of your critics have commented, Dawn is all about the money. Dawn is too materialistic. Dawn is just playing with the kids out there and not actually teaching them real martial arts. Have these instructors totally misunderstood you and just simply missed the point? How would you respond?
They're just jealous. No. Well, you know what? I do enjoy monetary success. Is that a bad thing?
I don't think so.
So I do believe that whatever we focus on, we can create in our lives. And I think that often people have a fear of monetary success, and they may not even know it.
Mm-hmm.
They have a subconscious thoughts going on that they can't make it or they shouldn't make it or something, but I have none of that. So as far as the as far as the playing with the kids comment, I think that, I think you can answer that question.
I wanted to hear it more.
You filmed me teaching three different age groups.
Yeah.
On our A-plus children's instruction DVD set that we did.
That's right.
With NATMA. And you saw the kids were getting a lot of karate, but we're playful with them at the same time. Again, it depends on their ages. So
mm-hmm.
I'll be playful with the younger kids, making sure I incorporate their basic karate techniques within that. But when it comes to the older kids, I'm the first one to be very strict, especially when it comes to Black Belt Club.
I see.
And my belt tests are also often supervised by my instructor, Neil Farkas, who's a seventh degree in Shotokan. So I can assure you, he's an old school guy, and he's not going to be leniently handing out belts either.
Yeah, and he is very, very old school, no mm-hmm. question. Who's in charge of the marketing of your schools?
It's a combination. I basically have I create the ads and brochures again because I love design. So it's anything related to graphics I really enjoy doing. And then my husband and partner Ben Yellen does the negotiating for ad space and that kind of thing.
And Ben is not the kind of guy you want to be negotiating against, let me tell you.
Yeah, he's pretty good with that, I have to say.
Now, what type of marketing or what marketing strategies have you found that work best for you? Basically, how are you getting your students?
One that is really good, our general manager, Alicia DeSisto, she acts as the community liaison. So we often give generous donations to the local schools, and we do get new students that way. And we also advertise in the local parenting-type magazines. And, again, we do our coupon programs. And,
mm-hmm.
again, most of it's word of mouth, really. Again, we advertise where we see we're getting results. And I think it's really a combination. By the time people come in, they've probably heard about us. They saw our sign. They drove by. They saw maybe an ad in one of the parenting magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all a build-up.
Okay. Now, besides tuition, what are some revenue-generating activities or alternate profit centers that you would recommend for the school owners listening to this CD?
We have retail products that are related to things we do in our program. We do fun meditations with younger kids based on animal powers.
Hmm.
And so we tend to have a store that has different kinds of little animal type toys.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do a meditation where they hold crystals.
Mm-hmm.
So we have those for sale, which the kids love. They make their own little treasure boxes and take those home to practice their meditation with. We do our birthday parties. And we do a lot of fun workshops that bring in great extra money. We'll run workshops all the time that will get, say, 12, 14 kids in for an hour and a half. They're paying $45 each.
Hmm.
It's nice. It's nice extra income.
And do you do private lessons?
We do, but not as we don't really have that much dojo space to do that because we pretty much have classes going, which is more profitable.
I understand. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, another question. Let's go back to the billing companies again. I know you're part of Member Solutions,
mm-hmm.
and if a school owner doesn't use a billing company, why specifically would you recommend that they do? How has it helped you?
You just don't want to be a bill collector. Again, that's even when we're collecting for test fees or workshops or that kind of thing, you could see the parents like, oh, I'm pulling out my wallet again. You don't want to have that. You want to avoid that feeling, and then you don't want to be put in that position of having to collect when they don't pay, and then do you let their child go into the class, and it's just so nice to not have any of that in the school. It's just auto-debit, goes to your account, you can rely on it, you can expect it, and it just is superior.
I see. Now, I've learned that you're very future-focused, you're very strategic and very smart. Do you encourage continuing education, and what are some of the things that you do personally to sharpen your skills, personal and professional skills?
Okay. I, first of all, just reading. I love reading MA Pro and MA Success magazines. I often pick up thought-provoking ideas. I mean, if it's just one idea from another talented person in the industry, it's great. There's always new things to learn, And by the way, I especially enjoy your articles, Rob.
Oh, thank you.
I even post them on our employee bulletin boards.
So you're always reading, you're always learning, and I guess that's truly one of the hallmark qualities of everybody I've ever known that's been successful is that they just seem to be a lifelong student. Are you?
Absolutely. There's always something to learn, and I love the Super Show. My gosh, what a wealth of people that attend there and just the seminars that are held, and it's just important.
Yeah, I follow you. Now, your husband Ben and I have had many discussions on the importance of selecting a really good location.
Mm-hmm.
For the benefit of our audience, I'd like to hear your thoughts on how to choose a location properly. I mean, what specifically do you look for when you're seeking a new location, and what specifically do you try to avoid?
Well, we do a demographic study. First and foremost, we tend to open our schools in higher income locations with a lot of family homes. And we also like to open on main boulevards because even though the rents are higher there, we consider that those extra costs are just part of our marketing budget.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that our signage will bring a lot of drive-bys and walk-ins. So again, it's worth the extra dollars to be on a major street.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. And in some of your different locations, the surrounding incomes, what are they roughly?
Most of the our schools are in areas where the average home is close to $1 million.
Okay.
Now we do get a mix, and we get plenty of people that live in condos or even apartments, and it's definitely a mix, but we tend to be in general in those types of neighborhoods.
And now this is a key point. You're specifically looking for that, aren't you?
We are.
Yeah. So many times over the years I've spoken with so many school owners and they were just having a very tough time making a go of things, and you come to find out that they're in an economically depressed area.
Right.
You know, and
they went there because they probably got great rent,
mm-hmm.
but didn't really think their audience through.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think there's something to be said for your clientele also. Once I was at your school and you pointed out one of the kids, his dad was on some TV show or something, and I know, didn't Arnold Schwarzenegger's kids train at your school? And
yes, I taught three of his four children. He was there for over 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably have taught most of the biggest Hollywood celebrities' children
mm-hmm.
have passed through our schools. So, but you know, I think that they feel comfortable coming there because I've always just treated them like mom or dad.
Now let's look at something else here too. Your schools are very clean.
Yes.
They are attractive. They're professional looking, and you spend quite a bit of money, I'm sure, to make your schools look this way. It's a great investment, mm-hmm. and I don't think that Arnold Schwarzenegger or some of these other folks that have brought their kids there would do it if your school looked like a dump.
Right, they could go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's both the aesthetics and again just having a top notch program that they feel their children are developing with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that completely. Now, one of the keys to growing any membership-driven organization is to have good retention. How's your retention?
We probably have about a 30% turnover, and I know the national average is about 50%. So we're doing better than that. But we're still growing because even with that percentage, we are on a consistent growth rate of about 20% a year.
Fantastic. And is that growth occurring because of more marketing dollars spent, or is it just because of more word of mouth?
Yeah, maybe a little of both. You know, our marketing budget, the more schools we open, obviously, we consolidate our advertising, and our marketing budget actually goes down.
Are you working the media very much in your local area?
We've done some special programs. We did the Kids Safe 911, and we got a little press from that. Kids Kicking Cancer event.
Right.
And had some nice guest martial artists come, including Bong Soo-han and
yeah.
Mike Swain. And it was a really nice event. We had a silent auction, and we raised some money for them, and we got a little bit of press from that as well. So periodically we do, but I haven't really had to try to rely on that or push that at all because, again, we just have established a good word of mouth and a good reputation in our neighborhood.
Now, can you give us some tested and proven tips, tactics, strategies, or concepts that our listeners can implement right away that will help them to improve their retention? Because that's a big hot button now. What advice would you give them?
Okay, well, number one, first and foremost, lots of praise. It doesn't matter what age you are, we all like praise. It all helps us to feel a sense of worth, a sense of value, and that's key for the human psyche. So if a child feels successful, he or she will want to continue. So the rewards are great, use stickers, patches, stripe tips on their belts. These all serve to stimulate the student, and that's really the key.
Mm-hmm. And does your staff do much phone follow-up with the students?
Yeah. They basically, if we see a child is not keeping up with their attendance or they're just don't seem quite as motivated, we'll definitely call the parent and see what's up, if there's something we can do, or maybe mm-hmm. a private lesson to help motivate them, or maybe they can get their stripe tip a little sooner, that kind of thing.
I follow you. Very good then. Now, for some instructors, running their schools is just a hobby. Now, for others, it's a business. It's clear that for you, it's a business. Now, how much time do you and or your husband spend analyzing your school's numbers? Is there a major emphasis on the numbers, and why?
I think it's important to keep up on them. I don't focus. I get a weekly report. So I review my weekly attendance report at each school for every single class that's running. I review managers print up reports on enrollment as far as new signups, any kids that have dropped out and why, who their teachers were, so that I can discuss it with them, what happened, that basically numbers on our profits, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we stay on top of it. Probably the most important statistic for me, where I know my school is running the way it should, are the attendance statistics. So I print up my schedule. Every week the managers email me the weekly schedule from their school with numbers next to them as far as how many kids are attending in each class. If I see a class that once had a dozen kids all of a sudden filters down to four kids in a few weeks, I immediately find out what's going on. Is something happening? Did the group of kids just as a group all of a sudden get discouraged somehow? I get right on it because you need to keep the attendance numbers up first and foremost. If your attendance numbers are up, everything, all the other numbers will be good.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Yeah, good point. Now, I know that you're a very spiritual person, Dawn. Has this given you a business advantage in any way?
I think I am spiritual, but there are a lot of definitions to that. Probably a better word is that I'm a really sensitive person. And I'm sensitive in the way that I try to listen to the needs of the customers, to the students, the parents, my employees, and really just create the most positive and fulfilling experience that I can, because this is where we're spending our day, and it especially as an employee, it's where we're working most of our waking hours. It's what we're doing with our day, so it's just very important that there's clear communication and that there's just a sense of well-being in the space itself.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like you're doing well by doing good. In conclusion, what is your definition of success?
That's easy. Happiness. Happiness for myself and within the eyes of others. When I see a young child that, and their eyes are glowing and they feel proud of themselves, I almost get teary-eyed. I mean, that is what it's all about for me. So.
I guess that is the secret to it all, to be happy.
Love what you do.
So love what you do. Very good then. Well, this has been a great interview. It was really interesting for me to hear you talk about the business side of things, because much of the work we've done together in the past focused in on the teaching side of things.
Right.
And on that note, your A+ Children's Instruction DVD series, which is available, of course, through NAPMA, is just simply outstanding. And I think it's important for instructors to watch that so they pick up on all the little nuances of your teaching style, because at the end of the day, you have a very successful teaching style and a very, very successful school operation. Dawn, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us here today on The Sounds of Success.
Oh, it was really fun. Thank you so much, Rob.
Okay, and we'll see you at the Super Show.
I can't wait.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.